When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast, and now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right, you're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas, that's Ben Folks. We're both longtime MMA journalists, and for almost the last 12 years, we've been meeting here every week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben, it sort of seemed like a low-impact week for combat sports, low-impact weekend. You didn't have a UFC. But you had a lot of stuff actually going on. You know, PFL had an event on Friday. You had the Garcia-Haney boxing match on Saturday night. There was a couple other things sprinkled in out there. And I was actually reflecting today as I was going through the news. One thing that is actually kind of legitimately rad about the current moment in combat sports is you have kind of all of these different flavors of stuff that you can dip your toe into if you want to. You know, if you want to watch the PFL on Friday, you can. If you want to tune in to karate combat, you can do that. If you want to watch the slap fights, those are out there. God help you, you son of a bitch. You sick fuck. If you want to watch the slap fights. But it's there, man. There's stuff out there. So it's not just, you know, as much as we want to pretend like there's this monolith out there. And it is true that the UFC dominates 95%, 98% of the MMA market at this point. But like, if you just want to watch the fights, man, there's stuff out there that you could sink your hooks into if there's no crappy UFC Apex event on Saturday night.
That's true. And I honestly think that maybe, especially in the MMA space, the UFC's dominance has led to a proliferation of kind of other stuff. Because you remember there was a time where people were thinking, okay, we're just going to try to compete with the UFC at straight up MMA stuff. It'll be a little bit different, a little bit different fighters, different look maybe, but we're going to go head to head with them on putting on MMA events. And now that a lot of people have tried and failed at that, there is, I think, a little more incentive to be like, what could we do that offers a completely different thing?
Yeah. This weekend, I watched part of an event called BYB Extreme Fighting.
Okay, I'm familiar with this.
It takes place in the Trigon.
Yep.
Which is
very small, like a very small fighting enclosure just in general.
It's a triangle-shaped, quote-unquote, ring. A triangle-shaped roped enclosure for your fighting needs. And it's run by Dada 5000.
Of course it is.
Which is a thing that I didn't remember until I started watching it. Some people over on the CME Patreon Discord message board reminded me that it's a Dada 5000 joint. And he was out there handling the post-fight interviews himself, which I thought was, you know, big of him to take time out of his busy schedule to go out
it
there.
It is possible that the staff for BYB Extreme is not exactly extensive.
You think maybe it's like Dada 5000 and his aunt?
I get the feeling that if you were to call up the BYB Extreme offices, Dada 5000 answers, like from his car.
Yeah.
You know?
This, I don't even know where this was on because it was on Fubo. And it's just like, you know how Fubo will tell you, like, here's the sporting events that are happening. One of them was BYB Extreme Fighting. And I was like, why the fuck not? And I clicked on it. And it appeared to be some like regional sports television network. I assume in Florida, that's probably where BYB fights emanates from. And so, I watched a little bit of it. It was exactly what you think it is.
Don't you come up in here and don't you start using emanates when it comes to talking about where sporting events go down. It bothers me every time, and it bothered me again when I saw the UFC WWE press release thing that I'm sure we'll get into talking about later. Whenever anybody throws that in there, like, this event emanates from the T-Mobile Arena, and it's just like, no, man, it's just happening there. It's not a magical spell that you conjured that then spreads out into the world. That's not what it is. Come on. Somebody running wild with a thesaurus is what that is.
I will use whatever word I want to. Thank you very much. Whatever word emanates from my vocabulary at any given time, I will use.
See, that's honestly a better use of it.
Did you see Luke Rockhold knock out Joe Schilling in the karate combat? How about that for Luke Rockhold?
Knocked him out like he was a man mouthing off and fake lunging at you at a bar.
It's
a classic Joe Schilling reference, by the way.
Yeah, no, it is. That the Karate Combat broadcast has Boss Rutan and George St. Pierre on it at the same time. So that's pretty dope. And they fight in that, like, in the weird pit where you can run a guy up on the side of the pit.
Yeah.
Just good stuff.
Have you seen, I saw these clips somebody posted, I think, like, screenshots from Boss Rutan's social media or somebody else who was posing with Boss Rutan on social media. Boss Rutan has discovered where they keep the weights.
Oh, did he figure out where the weights were?
He figured it out. I mean, he never didn't know, but I would say, especially for a gentleman of a certain age, it's a little bit surprising just how thoroughly he has located the weights recently.
You think maybe he moved up from like a 2-day-a-week pass at his gym to like the 24-hour access where you can go in
that
there
had to be it.
Lift the weights whenever you want?
Yeah, that, threw in some intermittent fasting, messing around with some exercise bands.
Yeah, maybe a doctor told him exactly when he was going to die, and then he got on a really good exercise program.
That is popular, I hear.
Remember, you're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast proper. This show drops every Monday afternoon for free in your timelines and your podcast libraries. But if you want even more of the Co-Main Event, you can find Ben Folks and myself all week over on Patreon. Hit us up at patreon.com/co-main-event and get loads of extra audio and video content, as well as access to our official Discord message board where they're talking fights and a lot of other stuff literally all the time. Ben, there's people on the CME Patreon Discord message board organizing live Dungeons and Dragons games of an evening that you can go in there and just play in the video chat room. If that's your steez, if that's what you're into, if that's what you're looking for, if you want people on the internet who fit your very specific niche of interests, they're over there, man. You can find them. It's happening all the time.
You can find them and they will be happy to see you. In fact,
if that sounds like fun or anything of that ilk, you can head over to patreon.com/co-main-event and join one of the handy tiers of patronage over there. Follow the show, get all the extra content, and plus get in there to the message board. Talk with people about whatever you want, whatever you're into. Yeah, we got a fantasy sumo league about to jump off during the May Basho, and I'm taking part. I got a team on there. So,
Is it too late? Is it too late for me to get in there and is the big homie Takeru Fuji taken?
I'm not sure how it works yet. All I know is that I've signed up for a team. Our guy Tim Bissell is running it from the Sumo Stomp Substack. And so we're going to have fun. It's going to be a fun time. Patreon.com/co-main-event. That's where you can get in on all that action. Another way you could support the show is by going to comainevent.com and checking out our merchandise shop. We got t-shirts, we got hats, we got hoodies, and lots, lots more. Stop by and pick up the best-selling Daddest Man on the Planet coffee mug while we can keep him in stock. You could get the Dundasso t-shirt or hoodie, get a Bobby Knuck shirt, get a Volcamania shirt. We got it all. Just go to the website comainevent.com and click the link at the top of the page that says shop. We are partnering, as always, with our friends at Studio Superconductor on the shop. They are a brand and design studio from Portland, Oregon. We can't recommend them highly enough for all your design needs. Hit them up at studiosuperconductor.com or on Instagram at Studio Superconductor. We got music this week from our guys Foreign Cash. Again, that's CACHE. an LA-based production duo. If you like what you hear from them on the show, check out more of their stuff over at foreigncash.bandcamp.com or soundcloud.com/foreigncash. Really pleased to be able to share their music on the show. And again, the word cash is C-A-C-H-E. Three rounds as usual this week in the Co-Main Event Podcast. In round number one, WWE is moving to Netflix. Jake Paul is about to fight Mike Tyson on Netflix. Could the UFC also be headed to Netflix? MMA Magic 8-Ball says, signs point to yes? Maybe? And in round number two, PFL's 2024 welterweight and featherweight season is underway, and there are storylines, intrigue, drama. Please don't fast forward through this. And in round number three, did Ryan Garcia pull off one of boxing's all-time great troll jobs last week, as Jorge Masvidal suggested on social media? Or did this motherfucker actually show up crazy as a shithouse rat and whip that ass on Devin Haney? All that plus are you fucking kidding me and just saying stuff? But first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
The first piece of listener mail this week comes to us from Long Live Gunu, who writes, did you see Joe Pyfer leak the screenshot of the entire UFC 303 pay-per-view? Now, first of all, if you're going to address Mr. Pyfer, please treat him with the respect he deserves and refer to him as Joe Bodybags Pyfer.
Bodybags. Don't forget that Z at the end.
Needless to say, there were several matchups that seemed pretty tasty and some also maybe not yet agreed to. Here are a few. McGregor versus Chandler, Covington versus Gary, Hill versus Roundtree Jr., Pyfer versus Burial, Dariush versus Moicano, Magny versus Morales, Feely versus Swanson. P.S. This might be the best Conor McGregor card ever, which historically the UFC normally does not stack. This does look like an interesting pay-per-view, especially when, you know, the come down from UFC 300 is gonna last a few events here. We know that UFC 301 looks very Brazil-centric, but otherwise maybe not the most blockbuster card. So to see something like this slotted in there for UFC 303, hashtag would watch this card. Big if true, I guess I would say.
Yeah, as for it being stacked, despite it also being a Conor McGregor card, some of that is probably that we're dealing with International Fight Week, Red, White, and Fight Week, Chad.
Yeah.
That's, you know, they like to load up for that one. But also, is it possible that these days, when you go to book Conor McGregor in a fight, you do want to have some backup plans? Ooh. Just because. You know, just because there's a lot that could happen with the guy.
Just to be on the safe side, you mean?
You know, what if his yacht gets held up in customs or whatever? What if, you know, he's so passionate about water safety that he doesn't make it to fight night? What if just, you know, one of a half dozen things you could think of that would not be completely out of character for the guy at this point were to happen and keep him from getting there, from being there on the day? Because, you know, a whole lot of stuff. A guy hasn't fought in like 3 years, broke his leg last time we saw him. I'm just saying, there's stuff that could happen. So you want to make sure you have some backups. Though, I mean, how about this one? The Jamal Hill versus Khalil Roundtree Jr. Jamal Hill, Chad, you might remember, just fought.
Yeah, yeah.
Got knocked out.
Yeah.
In the light heavyweight title fight, like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I was actually going to do my are you fucking kidding me about this later in the show, but I'm just going to do it right now.
Okay.
I'm going to call an audible and I'm going to do are you fucking kidding me right now, because not only is Jamal Hill slated to fight Khalil Roundtree Jr. on this card, by the way, have you seen the publicity still for the Khalil Roundtree Jr. Jamal Hill fight, where they, you know, it's basically the Photoshop where they put the two fighters side by side and they're like, hey, these guys are about to fight.
Yeah.
I was wondering if they took this picture of Jamal Hill after the Alex Pereira fight, because it's the saddest looking fighter photo that you've ever seen. As someone on the Discord said, he looks like he just saw a dog get run over by a car.
Oh,
like he is, like, this is the least happy picture of a fighter used for promotional purposes that I have ever seen. He doesn't look tough either. He just looks bummed out. Just like he doesn't want to be there. But I digress. My are you fucking kidding me is this quote from Jamal Hill about the idea that he is going to take the UFC 303 fight against Khalil Roundtree. He says, this is his quote on his own YouTube channel. He says, I took no damage. Most of the fall was me falling down. I remember everything. I remember looking up, seeing his legs. I remember him coming in, trying to block, trying to reach for the underhook. He was able to land some shots and kind of throw my equilibrium off on the other side, but I was coherent the whole time throughout for the most part. So I take this on. We're moving forward. You fucking kidding me?
That's
Are you fucking kidding me, dude? I took no damage, he says. Bro, we watched the fight. We saw it. I wish these guys would stop pretending like we haven't seen the fights, because we have. We saw you get knocked out, dude. I took no damage, he says. You fucking kidding me?
Well, I mean, it was a short fight, so except for the part where he got punched really hard in the face and fell down, and then the parts where he got punched a bunch more times when he was down until the referee stepped in. If you take out those parts, not a lot of damage?
Maybe no damage. I looked around online. I couldn't find anything listing UFC 300 medical suspensions.
I saw this mentioned a couple other places where people are like, hey, wait a minute. Do we just not do those anymore? Or are they just not made public anymore? Because that used to be a staple of post-fight media coverage was, here's the list of medical suspensions released by the athletic commissions. Now, those were kind of bullshit always.
Right.
And we knew that. Because they would say something like a guy gets knocked out and they'd be like 60 days, no contact, 90 days, no contact, that kind of stuff. But there was always the asterisk, unless he gets cleared by a physician to come back sooner. And A, you can always find some doctor. The UFC could probably provide you with some doctor who can look at you and be like, hey, he's fine, he can get back in there. But also, it's not like the athletic commissions were really doing any work to make sure anybody was following this. The thing you could, I guess, say is at least it would stop the promoter from booking you. But then, you know, as long as you can get cleared, we saw it with Michael Bisping when he fought George St. Pierre, you know, got dropped, got choked out, and then the UFC was able to book him, turn around like 2 weeks later. And so it's like you can always do that if you want to. The athletic commissions aren't really going to stand in the way. And here it just seems like I understand the impetus for somebody like Jamal Hill.
Where he's okay, just hold on. You're going to make fun of me earlier for saying emanates, and now you're going to throw impetus out there? Come on. It's a two-way street, bro.
I understand the motivation for Jamal Hill in this situation, because you get knocked out, it's a quick fight, you feel bummed, you want to get back in there, get that bitter taste of defeat out of your mouth, and you say, get me in there as soon as you can. Get me somebody, like, I gotta turn around and fight again, get right back in there. But also, we've seen that go badly. Because, for one thing, you just were in training camp, you're just getting ready for this fight, you're gonna turn right around after getting knocked out, get back in training camp, get back for another one. And then, you know, Khalil Roundtree Jr. is a guy who can swat. Regardless if you think you might be technically better, that guy can always catch you with something. And if you're not really healed all the way, if your brain's not ready to be taking those shots again, you could easily go from, hey, I was the UFC light heavyweight champ, had to give up the belt due to a kind of freak basketball injury, to now I'm sitting on two straight knockout losses and people are going, Jamal, who? Like, that could happen. Yeah. Like, that's a risk when you get in there. Plus, if you do go in there and you beat Khalil Roundtree Jr., it's not like people are coming out of that and being like, okay, title rematch immediately. It's not that high profile thing, but it is still dangerous, especially given the situation.
I took no damage. Fucking kidding me?
He also, I saw somebody point out that he was on Instagram. You know, if ever there's a guy who is going to get in the comments and battle it out with you, it's Jamal Hill. And somebody was like, okay, you took an ass whipping against Alex Pereira, though. And he was like, LOL, what, no ass whipping? And you were like, what would you call it? Like, it wasn't particularly competitive, you know? Usually, when the referee is pulling one dude off of the other dude who is laying there with his eyes kind of rolled back in his head, it's not an ass whooping, you know?
Next question this week comes to us from Dan Alexander, who writes, so Dana had his poor team spend their valuable time creating a masterpiece. savaging the woke-ass media, whoever dare doubt him. Do you think he has another version saved in his folder, apologizing to said woke-ass media for an absolute shit show of a card, just in case UFC 300 had failed to deliver? UFC 300 equals great storylines, great fighters, and the incentive of $300,000 plus. I'd argue that if you'd added that kind of incentive, it would improve every fight and every fight card by 50%. Please discourse.
I did see this video. You know who's not in the video, Chad?
I didn't watch it. I'm not watching this man's bespoke videos anymore. Handmade videos done to please the emperor, where he responds to largely imagined enemies in a gotcha kind of a way.
Yeah. I mean, when you say, okay, largely imagined is a good one on this, because it's like the one that he made after he wanted to boast about how I was right about the pandemic all along, you guys were wrong. That one had a lot more familiar names of MMA media people in it, at least. This one, first of all, when he goes to show you, like, start running through the highlight reel of clips of basically the people being wrong about UFC 300, the first one we start with is Brendan Schaub. It's like Brendan Schaub podcaster or something. It's how it identifies him. It does not say that he used to fight in the goddamn UFC. It says like Brendan Schaub podcaster. But then there's a lot of these other, like, he'll manage to squeeze some aerial thing in there, even if he has to take him out of context, which is the same thing they did the last time they did one of these videos. Remember where he went like out of their way to take aerial out of context so they could put him in the pandemic video, and did it basically here again, because I heard a lot of what Ariel said about UFC 300 is a lot of the same stuff that we all said, where it was just like, okay, it's top to bottom, it's a good card. You hyped the main event before you had one, and that part didn't deliver, but that also you hyped it to a point where nothing was going to match that. But then a lot of the other people featured on this, where it's just like, it's a podcast you never heard of, some YouTube channel you never heard of, stuff like that, and you're just kind of like, man, how... like, what did you put that poor video editor through to go and find some of this stuff just so you could paint it as if, like, the entire media world was against you? Because, you know, there's no CME stuff in there, because we were saying this looks like it's going to be a good card, especially as a total value, which is exactly what it was, you know? And yet, like, I don't know. Here's one of the things. A lot of the video things seems to highlight the UFC's success in this. Talks about the gate, the viewership numbers on for the prelims on ESPN, how many people watched it on social media, especially they point out the Holloway Gaethje finish. Like the most viewed clip ever on UFC Instagram or what. And it's like, well, okay, you also put the finish on Instagram. You guys don't usually do that with your pay-per-views because you're trying to make people buy them. And here, you know, you did a thing where if somebody else had done it, you would have complained and got their shit taken down. And you put the great finish of a pay-per-view bout on Instagram. Yeah, I bet a lot of people watched that. It was amazing. But it's also, it's like always in a rush to give himself and the company credit and not so much the fighters who actually did the stuff. You know, like they're in there, we see them, stuff like that. But it's like, somebody asked at the post-fight press conference at UFC 300, and if not for the pile of trash neck, I would have turned around in my seat to give him a look. But somebody was like, do you ever give yourself credit? Do you ever, like, pat yourself on the back after, you know, a busy weekend? I know you're just always focused on the next. And I was just like, bro, that is one thing you don't need to worry about, is if Dana White has given himself enough credit. He is always the first person to give himself some credit. And it's like the fighters went out and did this stuff. And you know how it goes. We've seen it before. If the fighters did not go out there and put on a great show, if the fights were kind of shitty, Dana White would be the first person to show up at the press conference and be like, these fucking fighters, you know, to lay it all on them. And then when it's a success, because the fighters, the great fighters that you lined up for this thing turned in great fights, then it's like, look at us, the UFC, aren't we amazing?
Yeah, let's be clear. The UFC 300 was a success after the fact because the fights were great, right? Everyone looked at the card prior to it because Dana White had promised us the fucking moon and then delivered like a very solid all-around fight card. Everyone looked at it and said, this looks like a solid fight card, but it does not live up to our expectations of what he promised us to begin with. So the fact that afterward, everyone was saying, oh, maybe we were wrong. Maybe we deserve to eat a little crow. This was a good fight card. That was entirely, entirely based on the performances of the athletes, which it almost always is. So, you know, pat yourself on the back all you want, but like you put together a fine fight card and then the fighters went out there and made it great. I also wonder, first of all, I saw this on the Bloody Elbow Substack, that some poor guy, Jesse Merrill, aka Jesse on Fire, who I've never heard of before, who is an entirely positive UFC podcaster. This guy, I've never listened to him before, but I understand that he's, let's say he's on the shill side of things. He's on the positive end of things. And they put him in this video out of context where he was actually making fun of people talking shit about UFC 300.
What?
And they put him in here and he has this response. I'm just going to read, it's long, so I'm just going to read you a little bit of it. He says, I had my heart shattered in a million pieces when I had 10,000 people text message me and DM me, hey, you're in Dana's reel. And I was like, no way, dude. Oh my gosh, finally I'm getting the recognition that I have always hoped for.
Oh God, you're breaking my goddamn heart.
I go look, and it's a compilation of people hating on UFC 300, and they put a clip of me making fun of the YouTubers who were constantly making fun of UFC 300 as if I was making fun of the UFC 300 card. And I was like, what the? I was making fun of them. There's like hours and hours of footage of me talking about UFC 300. I never said a single negative thing about it. Not only that, I paid $4,000 for my tickets to UFC 300. I had one of the best nights of my life. And then most importantly, I think most important to this story is the little number right here. Apparently they missed this tweet of mine saying indie content creators who made their coverage leading up to UFC 300 all about how garbage the card was. You know who you are. You should apologize to Dana White and the UFC after the single greatest night of fights in history. This guy is basically parroting Dana White's own words, and they still put him in the fuck you video. Are you kidding me?
Wow. That makes me so sad. Made me so sad.
This is the only point when I could ever feel bad for a dude like that.
Well, see, that is although a lesson that a lot of media people have learned the hard way over the years, is that it does not pay to think like, okay, I'll toe the company line for the UFC and come to their aid and be the white knight defending the multimillionaires who own the shit every single time, because A, the rewards are not going to be what you think. They're not going to be super appreciated. They just expect that people will do that stuff. They don't, to the extent they notice you at all, it's in moments like this. And then it's like, as soon as it's convenient for them to turn on you, they will do that too. So that is incredibly sad. You've really bummed me out by telling me this. I really felt like, you know, because a lot of these videos, it seems like they must have really been scraping the entire internet.
Well, that's the other thing I was wondering. Like, so either Dana White, who says up, swears up and down, he doesn't care about the internet. He's just on some
never
podcast.
Reads anything.
He's on some podcast like 3 weeks ago where he's like, hey, man, if you get your feelings hurt by social media, you shouldn't be on social media. And then he turns around every time he feels like anyone has criticized him in any way. And he like has his people put together a special burn video, like, hey, gotcha video about these people. So if anything, I think we know who, there's one guy who seems to care, get his feelings maybe a little hurt about what is said on the internet about him. But either Dana White has all of this UFC 300 criticism already bookmarked on the internet, like, hey, here's the guys I'm mad at, or he's basically telling the people who work for him, hey, go find some people talking shit about UFC 300 so we can make a video about that, which is just amazing when you think about it.
Yeah.
Next question this week comes to us from Hair Danny Boy the Third, who writes, oh wait, no, I was going to do this one, from Darkwing Duck, who writes, imagine you are each Glover Teixeira, or whoever makes the decision in that Alex Pereira camp. What would you have him do next? Try to go up to heavyweight to try his luck against Tom looking for a fight Aspinall? Or carry on business as usual and defend his title against Magomed? I might wrestle away your title via boring unanimous decision on Kalayev. Seems like he kind of answered his own question there.
I mean, Ankalaev is not as wrestling-centric as I think people assume he is when they hear the Magomed in his name. But still, as soon as that started to get brought up as a possible next move for Alex Pereira, I was just like, really? We have an opportunity to do something fun, and we're going to put together Pereira versus Ankalaev? Bro. Nobody came out of UFC 300 going, all right, but now it's time. It is time for Alex Pereira to face Magomed Ankalaev. Nobody was saying that. Nobody was just like, I absolutely must have that next. If he wants to go up there to heavyweight, Tom Aspinall can't seem to find himself a dance partner. One of these guys were like John Jones, somebody that actually makes sense for him to fight. Then damn it, you could do a whole lot worse than Pereira versus Aspinall. I think maybe it would be a bad idea. I can see a lot of ways that that goes wrong for Alex Pereira, but I would love to see it. And it definitely generates a lot more interest than him versus Magomed Ankalaev.
Yeah. He's basically saying he wants to fight Tom Aspinall, but if it's going to take a long time, then he's going to fight Ankalaev. So,
well, I think it was the big homie Luke Thomas who made the point, like, hey, if he wants to real quick go up to heavyweight now, let him speed run his way through a legendary UFC career. He'd been here only a few years, and he's already been a two-division champion. Had those memorable fights with Israel Adesanya, goes up light heavyweight, is part of some very memorable moments there. Now he wants to go up to heavyweight. I mean, we're squeezing a whole lot of living into a very short time period, but why the hell not? If he's up for it, let's do it. Do it while you can, you know?
Here's the last one from Hair Danny Boy III, who writes, is Poatan the first guy in Brazilian jiu-jitsu history to get his black belt by knocking out people? I mean, Mighty Mouse just beat a behemoth in a grappling competition, has 8 submission wins to his name, including a goddamn suplex to armbar masterpiece, and the man is a measly brown belt. What's going on here?
Okay, that is a good point when you contrast it with the indefensible, frankly, decision to have Demetrius Johnson still as a brown belt.
Yeah.
We've definitely seen people who got the belt promotion after a fight in which they did no grappling at all. Like, that's happened before. I don't know if we've ever seen it with a guy who, throughout his entire MMA career, has done as little grappling as possible as Alex Pereira has.
Yeah. I still think Matt Hume is sitting around in Seattle looking at Demetrius Johnson's body of work and being like, he could do more. I need to see more before I'm convinced that he's black belt material.
What belt would Matt Hume have Alex Pereira at right now?
clear. Yes. Clear belt. Clear plastic belt from a raincoat that he found at the Army Navy store.
Hold your gi pants up with a piece of rope he found in the parking lot.
All right, that's going to do it for listener mail this week. If you have a question, comment, or concern to air to the podcast in future weeks, you know how to do it. Go to the website, comainevent.com. Click the link in the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. Right now, we're going to go ahead and get started with round number one. Well, Ben, before we start round one, we got to give props to Nate Wilcox over on the Bloody Elbow Substack for being the first, maybe the only guy to have written about this topic so far. He's over on his The MMA Draw newsletter, so make sure you go over and subscribe to that. Support all of the former Bloody Elbow homies, frankly. So a lot of what we're going to talk about during this round comes from the stuff Nate was writing about this week and also from The Ankler, which is some kind of Hollywood business insider blog news outlet sort of a deal that Nate had linked to in his story. So thanks to him for all of that. Shout out also to intrepid investigative MMA journalist David Spade, who reportedly was the guy who posted on social media that Netflix co-CEO Ted Sarandos was sitting at cage side at UFC 300 alongside Ari Emanuel. Obviously, Ben, we already know that WWE, another product owned by the UFC parent company TKO, is already moving to Netflix in January 2025. Jake Paul is going to fight Mike Tyson, apparently in the middle of the night, in a boxing match that will also air for free to subscribers on Netflix on July 20th.
Wait, what do you mean the middle of the night?
Well, it's in like Saudi Arabia or something, isn't it? Like the CEO guy is like, I think a lot of people are going to be watching that in the middle of the night or whatever. So maybe he meant internationally. I don't know. So it's possible that I was confused, but he did say it's happening in the middle of the night. Another interesting thing that happens is in January of 2025 is that we assume the UFC will start the process of determining its next television broadcast right deal, or deals, the Ankler put in parentheses afterward, of course, meaning that the UFC might split up its content among numerous broadcast partners during this next round of negotiations, which I think we've talked about before. People have talked about it over on our Discord, and that's pretty much like the nightmare. That's the looming nightmare for fight fans, is that we might be back to an era when we essentially have UFC on Fox, UFC on Fox Sports, UFC on Fuel TV, and UFC pay-per-views. Again, multiple platforms, multiple streaming services that you might have to pay for in order to see all the content. But that's a possibility, I think, as far as the whole broadcast rights things go.
Yeah, that is always a possibility. And it seemed like that's the way it was headed last time, until, because you remember the announcements kind of came in two batches where it was ESPN assigned a deal for, I can't remember which one came first, whether it was broadcast or streaming, and then turned right around, bought the other half of the stuff too. And I think you can understand why the UFC would look around at a lot of other sports properties, as I am reminded, especially during times of the NHL playoffs, and see how they managed to spread stuff around. I think maybe that's the way to go. And maybe we were luckier than we realized to have it all under the ESPN roof this entire time.
Yeah.
It also seems, though, that like every single time they really pin their financial hopes on a huge financial windfall, a huge increase in the rights fees, it's not a little more each time, it's a ton more each time. And honestly, they seem pretty well positioned to get that, just because A, the number of players who might be in the bidding, and B, the UFC's rights tend to come up at a time when there's not a whole lot of other rights available.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things we saw when we saw their kind of investor documents after the initial sale, where they were sort of pointing out, like, anybody who wants to get into live sports, it's not like they're choosing between us and the NBA and Major League Baseball and the NFL. Like, we will be the only thing for 2 years on either side that comes up that's available. So especially if you're somebody like Netflix and you're like, you've been waiting for these opportunities to get into live sports stuff, they're not going to be another opportunity like this for a couple more years, probably.
Yeah. And obviously we're just assuming here that this is that Sarandos was doing a little window shopping out there, if you know what I mean. It's possible that, I guess, he and Ari Emanuel are just bros and he was there, you know, with "Let Me Bleed, Bro" stenciled across his chest. But I think it's a safe assumption that maybe he was there kicking the tires on a possible acquisition. Netflix doesn't currently have any live sports offering. I guess Sarandos had previously said that Netflix wouldn't get into the live sports business, which frankly doesn't make any sense to me. But in, you know, recent months and recent weeks, we've seen them kind of dive in with WWE and then the Jake Paul fight. And then there are some rumors floating around that they might try to pick up part of the NBA's upcoming broadcast rights also. And frankly, the UFC, for all the money they're going to make, is probably still going to be cheaper than any of those mainstream sports. And as we have noted in the past, it does bring the dedicated hardcore audience that will literally follow it anywhere and pay whatever in order to watch the content. And that was one of the things that was really super important to ESPN Plus when it first got going. So if Netflix is in fact going to dive into to live sports properties, I feel like honestly the UFC is going to be the perfect one to go for, because they're going to get it at a comparatively bargain basement price. And then, it's going to come preloaded with this fan base that is already conditioned to the idea that they're going to have to pay a bunch of money to watch it. So that'd be a win-win for me if I'm Netflix.
Do you think that it increases the chances that the UFC might be pulled away from ESPN, that ESPN also has sort of a backup option when it comes to MMA in the PFL? Do you think that hurts ESPN's motivation to match any bid that comes in?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I mean, the UFC does, as a guy who just who watched the PFL on Friday night and then to this morning tried to search some of the fights that I hadn't seen so we could talk about it today. Still pretty hard to find the PFL over there on ESPN Plus. If you're trying to find the replays, you gotta get pretty specific about it. There is some worries that ESPN is not necessarily going to be able to afford the UFC coming up next, just because for all of the hoopla, ESPN Plus is a very small part of the overall streaming market. And, you know, the UFC brought in a lot of new subscribers in 2019, whenever they fired the thing up. But, you know, it's, there's some concern that between the NBA and the NFL, which it's already paying rights for, that when it comes to a full scale media rights deal with the UFC, ESPN just might not be willing to spring for it compared to what Netflix is going to be able to offer.
Well, it is interesting that through its recent broadcast partner history, one thing that a lot of broadcasters have liked about the UFC is the fact that while the audience isn't as huge as it is for other major sports like NBA, Major League Baseball, NFL, the audience is extremely loyal. And especially for, like you said, for ESPN, when they were starting up a streaming service, and what you really need when you're first getting out the gates is you need a lot of people to be willing to flood in and sign up, and then you need a lot of content to help fill out the library. And the UFC give you both of that. You see, it's like, here's these people. They followed us to fucking Versus. You know, they followed us to Fuel TV. They will follow you to ESPN Plus. We can offer you that. They will sign up immediately. And we produce hours and hours and hours of content for you. And so it's like, okay, yeah, that's the same kind of proposition the UFC had offered to previous broadcast deals. Like when they went with Fox, a big part of the appeal for Fox was they were starting up the Fox Sports 1 network. And UFC was something you could put on there. And then remember when that was first getting going, and it was a lot of cable companies did not want to pay for it at first because they were just rebranding a previous channel that was kind of a niche channel. I don't know if it was like some kind of motorsports thing, and rebranding it as Fox Sports 1 and trying to charge a much higher premium for it. And a lot of cable companies were like, no, we're not going to do it. And one thing they could lean on was a bunch of angry UFC fans would be like, wait, you better have this thing so that I can watch UFC fight night events. So like, if Netflix is saying, all right, we're interested now in being a live sports broadcaster, then the UFC, they might just be the newest participant in that field that the UFC could turn to them and be like, you know who could bring you a lot of live sports fans immediately is us. And a whole lot of content to go with it.
Yeah, the UFC is on the record as saying that they are, quote, have a preference to stay at Disney, which is ESPN, obviously, but that they have, quote, three different platforms that have already reached out to the UFC about switching services.
So Rumble? Is Rumble one of them?
I should hope so. In 2018, the UFC negotiated a $1.5 billion all-inclusive media rights deal with ESPN, which expires at the end of 2025. The deal that TKO just cut with Netflix for WWE is a 10-year, $5 billion deal. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of money. One way or another. The other thing that I saw in this Ankler article is that Netflix has a much higher penetration footprint in international markets that ESPN does, and that ESPN Plus is not available in a lot of these international markets. And so the UFC has to go out and get these other TV deals, whereas Netflix is available in a lot more areas. So it could also help the international exposure for the UFC, which is something that they've been trying to get done for a while. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But it's pretty interesting that this guy was blocking David Spade's view of the octagon a couple Saturdays ago.
You know what? Give a shout out to David Spade, because I can remember when he was the only thing close to a celebrity the UFC had in the crowd, and they would never fail to let you know that David Spade was taken in the action back when it was Mike Goldberg pointing him out on like a UFC broadcast. All these years later, David Spade still up in there.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Now that the, you know, it's gotten a little A-listier over there at some of these, especially big UFC events, but that doesn't mean David Spade's going to be elbowed out. He's been down since day one.
You think Spade sitting back there being like, Timberlake, Bieber, sit down, you fucking noobs.
You fucking casuals.
I'm trying to watch the fights. Anyway, Ben, I already did my Are You Fucking Kidding Me earlier in the show. What's your Are You Fucking Kidding Me this week?
Well, Jed, I don't know if you heard about this. This was over there, I believe, in Russia at a fight night, a fight event, I think called GFC, if I'm not mistaken.
Sounds right. Does Dada 5000 run that one?
HFC.
Okay.
HFC. This is the name of the organization. A fighter by the name of Ali Hebadi has earned himself a lifetime ban from HFC. And it's like he was trying to make sure he did something lifetime ban worthy. The first thing he does is, like, at the start of the fight, you can see I see this several different places, and then it links to a Instagram account where that's the ring girl is walking around. For one thing, a little bit of an unusual approach. They have her walking around inside the cage, carrying the thing, and to announce that it is the first round. And as she goes past him, he gives her a little kick on the butt.
No, he does not.
He absolutely does. You could see him do it. And he seems to be kicking her on the butt as if to say, like, get out of here, get out of the way. And she kind of pauses and turns and looks at him like, bro, what's your problem? And then the referee has to be like, okay, you know. And then the guy loses kind of right away. Gets TKO'd. The referee has to pull the dude up off him as the guy's stuck on bottom. And seems like his opponent is saying a little something to him as he gets up. And then the dude waits for his opponent to, like, walk away after the fight has been stopped and turn his back. And then he goes lunging after him to try to attack him from behind after the fight has been stopped on some straight up Paul Daly shit, you know? Then, as if that's not even worse, it's like a post-fight interview. He goes and he puts on his glasses, puts on, like, I don't know if he felt like he wasn't seeing stuff well enough. But then he's standing there giving his post-fight remarks or whatever. And then you just see him lunge with like a front kick at somebody off camera. And you're just like, man, the entire thing was as if he showed up there and was just like, I never want to come back to this organization ever again. I want to make sure that they have an extremely low opinion of me. And I'll say yes, he got it done. He accomplished it. Banned for life. Are you fucking kidding me? How you managed to fuck up so many different ways all in like 5 minutes?
You fucking kidding me? And so sucker punches is that guy's thing. That's his steez. Sucker punches.
Seems like he's a real tough guy when you got your back turned to him, whether you're a fighter or a ring girl.
Yeah. If you got your hands full of a ring card. Yeah. I'd like to see him try that when, you know.
She turns, she is not going to just like go act like nothing happened, go sit down in the chair next to the cage and blow a kiss for the camera. She turns around and is just like, bro, what?
All right, that's going to do it for round number one. We'll be right back with round number two.
Well, Chad, the PFL was over there in Wintrust Arena, granddaddy of them all, Chicago, Illinois, on Friday night. You mentioned that you managed to take this one in, and that also that it managed to come at, you know, part when the MMA world is kind of coming down from UFC 300. You'd see maybe an opportunity here for the PFL, who caught some strays, let's say this, two weeks ago, when they had themselves an event in Las Vegas the night before UFC 300, and Dana White was up there at the post-fight press conference talking about PFLator. Mm-hmm. You get that? I mean, it's one of those where it works better in, like, people, we had a conversation about how to render that in print. That's one of those jokes, one of those Dana White burns where he likes to come up with, make fun of some other organization. It doesn't work very well in print, but we see what he's going for when he's talking about PFLator and how I did notice this. They're out there on the strip in Las Vegas, out in front of the MGM Grand when the UFC had the press conference, handing out flyers, offering people ticket deals and stuff like that. Maybe not a great idea to try to compete with the UFC or at least ride the UFC's coattails in a place like Las Vegas on a weekend like that. but then come back, you know, at event in Chicago the following weekend when the UFC takes it off, that seems like maybe a little bit more the PFL speed.
Yeah, they got themselves on the regular old ESPN, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's where I was watching it on Friday, and, you know, turned out a pretty good card. I say this every time. I used to say this about Bellator, too. But when I tune into the PFL, I'm reminded they have a pretty good broadcast going over there. You know, they do some kind of janky stuff with you know, graphics on the screen and stuff like that. But in the, you know, as in the big picture, I think they got a good broadcast. I like Sean O'Connell and Randy Couture and Dan Hardy on the call. They had AJ McKee in the sort of Dean Thomas role over there. He was doing a good job. They got Big John McCarthy to come in and tell you who won a round, which I think is it's the right place to put Big John if you're going to have him on the broadcast. They do an interesting thing where they put the live odds on the screen where they like change in real time. So You can see the live odds going up and down, which I found both interesting, but also maybe a little distracting that I was kind of watching the live odds ticker move around as the fight was happening.
I mean, we have in the past criticized the PFL broadcast, especially I have in the past criticized the PFL broadcast for just so much stuff on the screen.
Yeah, so they're trying to do too much, putting stuff on the screen. But some DTM, of that, yeah, some of that stuff much. Has they've cooled it down a little bit, but it's still a little bit of a problem, I'd say, on there. But, you know, the fights are good. They got good fighters. This is the first PFL season since the Bellator merger, so they have more talent than ever to sprinkle around on these cards. I guess I've seen people we're still, and maybe this is just something that will happen for a little while, but we're still trying to do this sort of Bellator versus PFL rivalry thing, like who's going to win these fights, the Bellator guy or the PFL guy, which I think was fine for the opening event, the actual Bellator versus PFL pay-per-view that they did. But now I'm sort of like, well, I mean, at this point, they're all PFL guys. Like, I don't know how long we can run that rivalry, to be honest.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think you could do it once, really, in which they did.
Yeah.
But then it also came out pretty one-sided. And so that does feel like the issue kind of got put to bed a little bit. What I think is really interesting is when, you know, the UFC comes out with a big pay-per-view like UFC 300, there's not much you're going to do to compete with something like that. You're better off clearing the lane. You're especially better off not going to Las Vegas. UFC makes it tough for anybody to go to Las Vegas. And so I think that's a mistake. But to go to some of these other places where you've been building up a little bit of a following, you know, your Uncasville, Connecticut's, and so forth, staking a little bit more of a foothold in places in like Ireland and the UK, and some of your Bellator, existing like Bellator deals that you've gotten yourself into now, maybe help you do some of that. That seems like a better fit for the PFL. But also, maybe like if the PFL could find some ways to make these one-to-one comparisons between, hey, we got a PFL event that's just available for you on either like this one on regular ESPN or ESPN Plus, compare and contrast with some of these UFC fight nights from the Apex, because there is not a huge difference in name recognition of the fighters involved. Like if we were to play one of our old one of my favorite games we used to play on this, where I just started to read you off names from the prelim portion of the card for this Saturday's UFC Apex fight night and asked you to guess whether these people were PFL people or UFC people, I don't know if you'd do great.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know if you would hear Gabriel Green versus James Lontop and immediately know, like, oh, yeah, those are for sure UFC dudes.
So, yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. Like, I think that as the UFC Apex stuff starts to get more and more just sort of like a made-for-TV product that we're not putting any extra effort into, that's a point where, like, the PFL could draw the comparison somehow and be like, these are not really as different as you guys think they are just because there's different names on the gloves.
Yeah. And you know what? This PFL 3 event over the weekend is a fun event. I liked it. I liked what I saw. You had some good fights on here. We talked about getting in the Borich business for a while. Adam Borich went out and had a slobber knocker with Enrique Barzola that Borich ended up winning. That was a great fight. Logan Storley, who was a huge favorite in this fight and, is another guy that came over from Bellator and was the former Bellator welterweight champion, had had a lot of success. He was 15-2 overall. He just got worked, like absolutely pounded by Shamil Musayev in their fight, which was interesting to me and fun to watch. He had Gota Yamaguchi and Neiman Gracie had a fairly one-sided fight, but that didn't stop Neiman Gracie for going for some flying arm bars, which is always fun to watch. And then, of course, he got some interesting storylines this season, both at featherweight and welterweight. Brendan Loughnane, who, of course, everyone remembers as the guy who was regarded as one of MMA's top prospects that Dana White had on the Contender Series and then decided not to sign him, seemingly to make an example out of him for, like, shooting for a takedown in a fight that he had obviously already won in the last minute of the third round just to make sure that he got the decision. And basically Dana White gave him the emperor's thumbs down after that one. But Loughnane was able to use that notoriety to go get himself some different fighting deals. He ended up winning the PFL 2022 featherweight tournament. So that's $1 million for old Brendan Loughnane. Seems like probably more than he would have made as a Dana White Contender Series prelim fighter over in the UFC.
Would have had to win roughly 25 fights to make that money.
So he won the 2022 PFL tournament, did not win last year, but he is back now to try to win the 2024 tournament. He defeated Pedro Carvalho with a kind of an early stoppage, but a lightning fast TKO a minute and 26 seconds into the first. And then you got this guy, Ben, Magomed Umalatov, who is undefeated in his PFL run. I believe this is his third or fourth PFL season that he's been in. He has not lost yet in the PFL, and yet he has also not won a tournament because he has pulled out of numerous fights. He's had injuries. He's had visa issues. He's had all kinds of stuff going. So not only are we seeing if Brendan Loughnane can come back and get himself another $1 million, we're trying to see if Magomed Umalatov can get himself $1 million, despite the fact that he has been very, very successful in the PFL already.
I cannot even tell you how impossible it would be to convince me if I were a pro fighter to take a fight with a guy named Magomed Umalatov.
One of the things I was thinking before the Logan Storley fight, because close listeners will remember that last week on our Patreon Power Hour show, I had a couple of PFL parlays, and one of them featured Logan Storley prominently, and he's, like I said, he's a big favorite in this fight. But as I was seeing the corners walk out for the fight, his opponent is Shamil Musayev, and I was like, you know what is a bad sign? Is if you're going in to fight someone and everyone in their corner has a beard but no mustache. That's when you look at him and you think, oh, did I train hard enough? Did I give this the attention that it deserves? Because there's a lot of beards over there and no mustaches.
See, that's what I was going to say, is if somebody called me and they're like, well, how about you versus Magomed Umalatov on April 19th, I'd be like, so you said his first name was Magomed? Is that right? Okay. What's his facial hair situation? Does he have the beard? Yeah. You know the one I'm talking about. Does he have that one? Yeah, he does. How about his ears? Would you say his ears are normal? Or would you say they're the other kind?
Yeah.
Okay, they're the other guy. Okay.
Do you have a Josh or a Brendan that I could fight, perchance?
Is there a Braden? Can I get a Braden in the bunch?
I don't know, Braden, that's starting to sound kind of like a wrestler. You don't want a Colton or a Braden or like a Dash. You probably don't want to fight a Dash.
No.
Yeah. You want to stick to a guy who sounds sort of like a stand-up oriented noob. Kind of
a guy. With normal ass ears and just clean shaven.
All right, that's going to do it this round. PFL seems like they got some good stuff going on over there. Just a periodic reminder that it's worth your time. All right, that's going to do it for round number two. We'll be right back with round number three. Well, Ben, as you know, I'm not a big boxing guy, so I didn't follow the lead up to this Ryan Garcia versus Devin Haney fight all that closely. But what I did know, what I did glean from my casual timeline, social media timeline, is that Ryan Garcia was acting like a lunatic last week leading up to this fight. I believe he missed weight. He showed up doing a bunch of crazy shit. There was some concern online that maybe he was doing drugs. He was acting very erratic. And nobody was really giving him a chance in this fight, maybe because of that. This is, again, my casual survey. But then he goes out there on Saturday. He knocks down Devin Haney 3 times. He ends up winning this fight. This seemed like a surprise to me. This seemed like almost an unthinkable turn of events, at least from what I had seen leading up to it.
Yeah, I think especially because when he's doing a bunch of strange stuff in the weeks leading up to the fight, there was at least a suggestion that, is he playing us? Is he doing this to generate interest and to, maybe convince Devin Haney to take him lightly? Is this all a ruse, in other words? And I think when he showed up heavy at the weigh-in, showed up a little over 3 pounds overweight for what was a title fight, what was an opportunity for him to get the title, which he did not win, despite winning the fight because of the weigh-in miss, that's when I think people kind of went, oh no, this does not seem like a brilliant Andy Kaufman-esque bit that he has pulled off on us. Like, it does seem like these are indicative of stuff going on in his life. And there's been a lot of stuff where it's like, you know, I believe his ex-wife was saying that she, like, very publicly, she felt like he was not doing okay. He's on there joking about how he and John Jones should have a fight where the both of them coked up. He, even after this fight, insisted he'd been drinking every day. All this stuff. And you could also see it in the betting odds, because when this fight was first announced, I believe Ryan Garcia was a little higher than like a 3-1 underdog. And that line just went up and up and up the weirder he was acting beforehand. And then when he missed weight, it jumped up again. And then to turn around after that, because it really did seem like we're going into something where it seems like maybe he's not really doing super well. And like, I wrote something before the fight where it was like, I don't know which is worse, if you're putting him in there where he is not doing well, and it was going to be a tough fight for him, even under the best of circumstances, or if he correctly surmised, you know, the way to sell this to fight fans is to act like you're a complete train wreck on the verge of total implosion. They love that.
Yeah.
They will go for that. And yet, I'm sure that it did.
That worked on me.
Increase interest.
Worked on me. I wouldn't probably even known this fight was happening if I hadn't seen people on my timeline talking about how he was acting like a lunatic.
And it's wild for him to go out there and win that fight that way. I'll tell you what, I was thinking about staying home and watching this one live, and then I was just like, will it make me sad, though? Will I just watch it and be like, well, what else did you think was going to happen? And then, like a man of culture, I was talked into going to a play on Saturday night. Went out there, went to a play. Afterwards, checked my phone, and I was just like, wait, hold up. He won? Are you kidding me? He won this fight after all that? And then, you know, I had to find the fight after the facts just so I could watch it and be like, how the hell did he go out there and beat, you know, previously undefeated Devin Haney in this fight? Like, it's incredible. And yet, afterwards, when he shows up, and it's always funny. It's been funny the lead up to this fight, and then also in the post fight when you see him with Oscar De La Hoya, and then you see Oscar De La Hoya like kind of looking nervous whenever Ryan Garcia starts talking, where he's just like, he's bringing us some attention here, but also he understands the possibility for this for him to keep it so real it goes wrong is always there. You could see it in that video where he and Devin Haney were supposed to throw out the first pitch at a Mets game, and then the Mets, after seeing them shoving each other and scuffling on the top of the Empire State Building, were like, yeah, we're actually not going to do that, and like just sent them home basically without them throwing the first pitch. And you could see where he's like posting a video to Instagram. He's walking with Oscar De La Hoya, and he's talking about how they were supposed to throw the first pitch, and then now they're not, and it's fine. And then he starts going, "Fuck the Mets! Fuck the Mets! Oh, they're fighters!" And then just like, you can see Oscar De La Hoya just peace out the video, just like walk off. And it's the same thing in the post-fight press conference where he's sitting there and he's like, "Ah, you guys all thought I was crazy. I'm not crazy, you know. I went out there, I beat Devin Haney, and I was drinking every day. Went out on Monday, went out on Tuesday. And you could see Oscar De La Hoya doing like the nervous laugh, like Philip Seymour Hoffman in The Big Lebowski, where he's just like, yes, we all, very spirited individual, Ryan Garcia, but also kind of trying to reach over there and like tap him on the shoulder to be like, enough, man, that's enough. Like, but like, it does all seem very genuine, and it also, you know, it reminded me, a thing that we've reflected on many times, that there is no moral lesson to be found in the result of a prize fight. We said it when, like, Floyd Mayweather was winning some of these fights, even as people were like, how are we supposed to feel good about a serial abuser of women getting our pay-per-view dollar? And I also feel like we shouldn't be at the risk of, like, turning right around and being like, okay, Ryan Garcia must be fine. It's all fine. Nothing to worry about here. No trouble signs at all because he won the fight. Because it's like, yeah, it's super surprising to me that he won the fight given how things seem to be going. But also, it doesn't mean like we should all start drinking every day in the lead up to our extremely taxing athletic endeavors. Like, I don't know if that... if there's a lesson necessarily to be learned from that aspect of it.
Earlier in the show, I talked a little bit about how I didn't know that I could feel bad for a UFC shill podcaster until I found out that the UFC took him out of context and like put him in their takedown video. I feel a little bad for John Jones catching these strays, man. Like, if you're John Jones, I mean, obviously you were just in the news for threatening to allegedly kill a drug collector. If you're John Jones, you're sitting at home being like, what did I do?
You know what you did. Come on.
This is out of the blue. It's like, I didn't do it. I mean, I was just trying to, you know, just trying to enjoy my Saturday. And then Ryan Garcia is out here being like, we should have a fight where we're both coked up. I mean.
Come on.
He brought it on himself. There's no question about that. But at the same time,
he's
like,
getting
it
out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. All right. Let's go ahead. We'll do just saying stuff and then we will move on for this week. Ben, I saw this press release landed in our inboxes earlier today. WWE's NXT Battleground show will go down on June 9th and it will be at the UFC Apex in Las Vegas. So here is that sweet, sweet brand crossover that we've been waiting for a while now. It would seem that the future of fighting is also the future of pro wrestling, which I think is exciting. WWE fans can look forward to more and more of the WWE just getting the UFC treatment from TKO, more sponsorships all over the ring, all over the broadcast, and now we're going to move some of our smaller events to the Apex. I mean, frankly, I imagine it's a great deal, right? I imagine that it's way less overhead for NXT in a lot of different ways. I can imagine that the UFC is probably getting some money for it. I don't know if the only fans who will be there are going to be like five guys sitting in easy chairs or will actually like get some fans in the stands at the Apex for the WWE shows because, you know, pro wrestling relies probably on more heavily on fan and crowd experience than MMA does. And it's just funny to me that here we are. We've been waiting. How's it going to change everyone's business? Well, here you go. We're going to start doing WWE shows, at least the smaller ones, at the Apex. Why? Probably because it's easier and it costs less money. I'm just saying.
I was curious when I read this press release because it also notes that limited NXT Battleground priority passes will soon be available through exclusive partner On Location, giving fans the chance to be ringside for every exhilarating moment, including premium seating, all-inclusive pre-show hospitality with WWE superstar appearances, ringside photo opportunities, and much more. When I saw that, I kind of went, is pro wrestling, is that crowd the best audience for that particular type of pitch? Because, you know, one thing that I think is tricky about selling people on UFC fight nights at the UFC Apex is because there's so few seats, those tickets can be kind of expensive.
Yeah.
And yet it's also the lowest tier of UFC programming. And so it's paying really premium prices to be one of a relatively few people in the building. And so feel close to the action, feel like it's kind of intimate, but to also see probably fighters that are not on your top list of people you wanted to see fight. people that are, you know, a lot of the undercard just being people you probably never heard of, and then not super high octane main events either. But for pro wrestling fans, everything I know about pro wrestling fans tells me, Chad, they fucking love a meet and greet.
Yeah, they do. They love a VIP experience, frankly.
Yeah. And so it's like, even if you were like, okay, yeah, the event is not going to be itself, like, it's not going to be WrestleMania, but there'd be some, they'll get some of the oldsters out there to shake hands, take pictures with you beforehand. You get to do some of that cool shit. Like, I think that part of an experience would be worth a lot to a lot of pro wrestling fans. Like, it might really work for that demographic.
Just saying. And it just seems like everything keeps working out for these guys, man. You know, every single turn, everything's just going great for WWE, UFC, TKO, when, no matter what they do. Just working out great.
Well, Jed, this week, my Just Saying stuff, Yuri P is talking about a move down to middleweight.
What? No, yeah. Come on.
Yep. Now, granted, I'm going to read you this quote. It sounds like it's not necessarily an immediate thing, but this is from the championship rounds over there on Twitter, where he says, rather than, you know, going up to heavyweight, I thought I'd try middleweight. I know that if I adjust my diet to where I feel great and clean, I know I could handle the middleweight division with some lighter diet. But I would definitely concentrate on that after winning the light heavyweight title.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm glad that it's not going to happen right away. Let's just say that.
I'm just saying, no. Somebody stop this man from doing that. Especially, I was standing there at the weigh-ins for UFC 300 and being like, this guy probably is doing pretty well to make light heavyweight. It's a big dude.
Yeah.
I don't know where that dude possibly cuts another 20 pounds from. I also don't know why you don't need to do that. Light heavyweight is the perfect place for the type of Weirdsmobile that Yuri P is. He clearly still has power there. I think the middleweight division, guys think, okay, I'll go down there and I'll just dominate with my size. I mean, there are going to be some faster dudes who you would encounter down there, and it's just fewer fun matchups, I think, for Jiří Procházka down there. Plus, you will kill yourself trying to get down there. It's ridiculous. We don't even need to be talking about it. It makes me angry that we're talking about it. And I don't blame Jiří Procházka because, hey, Weirdsmobile gonna Weirdsmobile.
Yeah.
You can't love a guy for being just absolutely bonkers and then get mad when he has a bonkers idea. This is on Yuri P's, his people, the people around him. Smile along with him when he says this stuff and nod, sure, whatever. But you know, as soon as he leaves the room, you guys, I hope, are making eye contact with each other. Like, we're not going to let him do that, right? We're going to, cooler heads are going to prevail before he drops 20 goddamn pounds to fight a middleweight. Like, this is on you guys. Don't let us down. I'm just saying.
Just saying. All right, that's going to do it this week for the Co-Main Event Podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Don't forget, we're over at the Patreon page all week. We'll be there Wednesday with our live chat, Thursday for the Doing the Damn Thing show, and then Friday for the Power Hour. It's going to be fun. Stop on by patreon.com/co-main-event and sign up to join the team. Thanks for the support, everybody. Thanks for listening. As for right now, we are done. We are through. We are out.
Chad, I know you saw my New York Rangers win game one.
Yeah, no, I did. I did, because you remember
scored
the first goal? I had a bet. I had a bet down on the Caps.
That's what you get. You know who scored the first goal for the New York Rangers in this postseason?
Was it Rempe?
It was Rempe.
Oh, how does that happen? No.
Fucking goon. Goon-ass Rempe getting out there, getting them on the board.
He'd go out there and clothesline one guy. He threw a rock bottom, hit a drop kick, and then the puck skittered out in front of the net, and he tapped it in.
You know, I didn't actually see the goal live when it was scored, but I knew what had happened when I got a text from Ben Gabriel, and it just said in all caps, "Goon."
Goon goal. Well, I'm glad. I'm happy for the kid. Maybe they'll let him keep the puck.